Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Each week, I invite a different guest from a different walk of life to talk to me about books that they've read, which have influenced them, and books they suggest we take to the beach this summer. You've no excuse not to be well read. Welcome to Beach Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Simon Walker. Now, Simon, you've had an interesting past. You were a hotelier.
I was indeed, yes.
For many, many years.
For many, many years.
And I actually met you once you'd moved to Malta and were no longer a hotelier by the time I met you.
Correct. I moved here in 2001, and after a couple of years of not doing very much, I got bored and decided I would like to become an English teacher.
Okay.
So I studied, and I had to take my English A level, which I hadn't got when I was, you know, at the usual age, which was fun at the age of 54.
Mm-hmm.
And passed that, and enjoyed the 7 books that we had to study in order to get there.
And so that turned you into a bookworm, or you were a bookworm before, really?
I've always been a bookworm, to be honest with you. When I was young, in the 50s, there wasn't much television. And so to entertain us, we used to read. Going back to sort of Enid Blyton and the Famous Five.
Oh, I love those.
And the Secret Seven.
Yeah.
Biggles, do you remember Biggles?
Yes,
Captain W.E. Yeah. Johns and his mate Ginger and all their First World War Sopwith Camel stories, which were wonderful. And I used to listen to things like Book at Bedtime on, what was the Home Service in those days?
Was that the BFBS, that sort of thing?
No, the Radio 4.
Ah, okay.
Yes, it was the forerunner to Radio 4. In fact, funnily enough, that's what got me into liking Evelyn Waugh as an author.
Okay.
They serialised his Sword of Honour trilogy about Guy Crouchback's experiences in the Second World War, which was an excellent book, I have to say. And I read all 3 of those, The Men-at-Arms, Officers and Gentlemen, and Unconditional Surrender. And that really got me into more serious reading, shall we say. I don't know if you like Evelyn Waugh or not, but...
I haven't dabbled, actually, to be honest. I don't even think there's anything in my library, so...
Oh, right. Well, I mean, things like Decline and Fall, Lighthearted, Brideshead Revisited, they made that fabulous television series, and Scoop put out more flags and so on. It was all England of a certain era, which I rather enjoyed, to be honest with you.
That's a sort of wartime...
Well, before it, between the wars, you know. In fact, recently, very recently, I came across a book of his that I didn't know about called Labels, which was published in 1930. And it's all about his extensive travels around the Mediterranean at that time, including a very interesting few on visiting Malta. At that time, which is in Valletta, and which is well worth reading.
Because nobody notes that, actually. Normally, you know, they talk about Byron having come and whatever, but that'd be something we should add to our tourist trail.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So you're sort of, that genre is your genre, that sort of between war, England?
Yes, it tends to be. I liked historical things, especially recent history. Graham Greene is another great author of mine. And, you know, he wrote, I think, slightly later than that, really, but it was still the same sort of era. But wonderful books like Stamboul Train, The Quiet American, Brighton Rock, which was made into a famous film with Richard Attenborough, and so on. And more recently, actually it was a while ago now, but later in his career, he wrote a book called The Human Factor, which I seem to have liked so much, I discovered I'd actually got 2 copies of it on my bookshelf the other day when I was looking.
So do you buy books all the time? When you travel, do you buy books in bulk? How do you...
I've always bought as I went along. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid I'm a hoarder. I've kept books. I've got hundreds of thousands of books. Well, not maybe thousands, but getting close to 1,000, I think,
mm-hmm.
at home still. And I brought them all to Malta with me. And I actually had to give up buying books and took to a Kindle, which I now absolutely adore, because I didn't have any more space. So it got a bit awkward, really.
So you literally keep every book that you...
Yes,
buy?
I do. I don't like lending books because you never tend to get them back, which is upsetting. Funny enough, I don't reread books very often, but I often like to get them out and just have a look at them.
Okay.
That doesn't sound
bit
like
of a flick
peculiar.
Through or something.
A bit of a flick through, yes. Look up a reference or something, mm-hmm. or just try to remember a good line. Whatever that might be, yes.
That's such a man thing, actually.
Is it?
Yes. I'm always surprised that men have this amazing capability for remembering lines or recording a line somewhere. It's really incredible.
One of my favourite first opening lines of a book is from L.P. Hartley's The Go-Between. The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there.
Uh-huh. That's a really good one, actually.
Yes.
But I wonder if all authors have to start with their first line. because that's the...
Well, I suppose they do, actually. I also believe that the opening few lines are what grabs your attention. Mm. So they're terribly important, I think.
Do you ever start a book, though, and think, no?
Not very often, I'm pleased to say, but I have done. Now, when I was young, I would stick with a book till the bitter end, because I felt I ought to read it from cover to cover.
You're so polite, though. Well, you probably didn't want to offend the author.
No, but I'm afraid these days, if I don't like it, I tend to just put it away. But there are few books that I don't like, or haven't liked, I suppose, if I'm honest, because I pick things that I think I will be interested in.
So do you go from... Kindle doesn't recommend another book to you, does it? Is that how it works?
It does. People who've read this also read that. But I also have a large number of friends, both in London and in Malta, who enjoy reading, and I'm always saying, what can you recommend, and it usually works.
Mm-hmm. And do you have like a stack of books waiting to be read in there?
No, I tend to always have a couple on the Kindle ready to go. Yes, and if I'm travelling, then I put a few more down, so, you know, just in case I couldn't bear to be caught short without a book. Yes, and so far so good.
Do you read every day, every morning, every evening?
I tend to read every day. I tend to read a lot more in the summer, funnily enough, when we used to have the boat and things like that, and, you know, on the beach when I'm relaxing. But I do read all the time. Yes, I think I probably read every day.
That's good.
Yes.
I think it's a good habit to get into.
Yes, it is.
So what are you reading at the moment? What's the sort of...
Well, I'm a great fan of a number of different authors, and I read lots of their books. And I'm at the moment reading an Alexander Kent book. And now you've probably never heard of him.
I don't know.
It's sort of boy's own stuff again, I'm afraid. Captain Richard Bligh, Royal Navy. This is a whole series of books starting with when he was a midshipman from about 1750 onwards. And the one I'm reading at the moment, and I can't remember the name, which is terrible, but it's very good. He's a captain now. He's just taken over a new ship. So they're very much of the sea, of the Napoleonic Wars and all this sort of thing. So I like that. It's history again.
Yes, you know, so. It's that sort of the social setting of the time.
Yes.
And is it the travels, the language, the food? What's the...
Well, yes, it is. And the discipline. I mean, I've just started this one, and they're in the situation where they're having to impress some men, you know, the press gangs, mm-hmm. as was in those days. When they were rounding up people and took them to sea. And he's taken over a ship where there'd been a bit of a mutiny and it's all gone badly wrong. So it's quite an interesting story of the time, you know. I mean, obviously that wasn't a very nice thing to do, pressing men, but what
history
happens,
you know.
Exactly.
You can't go back and change it. We can go forwards and change it.
Absolutely.
And tell us about some other books that you've enjoyed.
Well, going back to in a similar sort of era, I had a bit of a thing on Scott Fitzgerald for a while, all about the jazz age in America, and I loved, obviously, The Side of Paradise and The Great Gatsby, Tenders of the Night, and so on. And The Last Tycoon. Fitzgerald spent a lot of time in Hollywood in the latter part of his life, and he wrote this wonderful book called The Last Tycoon, which was all about a big, famous Hollywood producer, and it was supposedly loosely based on Irving Thalberg, who was a very famous producer of that time. He also wrote a lot of short stories, including the Pat Hobie or Hobby stories, which were about Hollywood hack. Same period about Hollywood, which were fun. I enjoyed those enormously, actually.
Do you have a link with Hollywood or movies or something? Was that from your hotelier days?
From my hotel days, yes. Okay. I have a lovely signed picture from Betty Davis to me and Jerry McLean. And obviously people... They used to come and stay when I was at Grosvenor House many years ago, so I've kept all those.
Any of them pop up in any of the stories? Or
No, they don't, actually, funnily enough, no. Actually, I have to say, I read these Fitzgerald books when I was in my 20s, which was a while ago, so I can't really remember all the detail, but...
I think there are some books that are good at different times of your life as well.
Yes, I think that's probably true, actually. Another person I was very keen on at that time, and again, writing about the same period of history, was Christopher Isherwood, who famously wrote Mr. Norris Changes Trains and Goodbye to Berlin, amongst other things, which turned into a play called I Am a Camera and a film called Cabaret, which was wonderful, with Liza Minnelli and John Gray and so on.
Yes, I love that. But...
And he wrote a number of other books of that time. There's a wonderful sort of semi-biographical, Christopher and His Kind, talking about, you know, life in Germany between the wars, before they all fled, with W.H. Auden and Stephen Spender, because they were all great mates in Berlin.
Hanging out over there.
Yes. And I think I've read everything he's ever written, actually, so he's a marvellous author.
I do get annoyed with authors when they've run out.
Well, he's dead now.
No, I know, but when you get to the end of their stack...
Oh, I know, exactly. Well, I've got a couple of others that I'm reading more contemporarily now, where that's actually happened, very sadly, but I was a great friend of mine in London recommended both of these authors to me, C.J. Sampson and Philip Carr, K-E-R-R, or Kerr, I think it's Kerr. a car rather. C.J. Sampson wrote a series of historical novels about a lawyer called Matthew Shardlake. These are set in the Henry VIII's reign.
Yes, and much older then. Uh-huh.
The first one is Dissolution of the Monasteries and so on. But they're sort of they're mystery stories. But what is good, he's very close to the court, and it includes lots of real-life characters, you know, like Henry VIII himself, Sir Richard Rich, and all sorts of people who are around at that time, Cardinal Wolsey, and he gets involved in all these cases. And they're really a good read.
Uh-huh.
There's about five or six of them, and they're all excellent. They follow on one. They're all individual stories, but they follow on. And sadly, I understand he's not very well, and I think he stopped writing. He wrote one other book called Winter in Madrid, which was set during the Spanish Civil War, which is also an excellent book. Excellent, so I would really recommend him. And Philip Carr writes about a Berlin detective called Bernie Gunter. He's written other books as well, but there's about 13 or 14 of these.
Okay, so a good stash to...
Yes, and again, sadly, he's just died. He died. He was only 62.
Okay.
He died earlier this year, I think it was. And I've just read the last one. But they're good because, again, they start during the sort of the Hitler's rise to power in the 30s, and they go on into the Second World War when he has to go into the SS as a policeman as opposed to anything else, because he was not a Nazi as such.
Mm.
And they're fantastic stories. They're rather sort of like, oh gosh, what's that American writer, famous crime writer? That sort of ilk. I've forgotten the name now, sorry. See me a moment.
And it sort of gives you an insight of history from different perspectives.
Yes,
and again,
he comes into touch with all of these real, rather nasty characters like Heydrich and Arthur Neave and goodness, who else? And Himmler, and they're very well written. The historical side is always very accurate. Mm-hmm. He always puts notes at the end to explain what actually happened and so on. But, you know, as I said, I've read all of those, and sadly there won't be any more
coming out.
Yes, anyway. And another great one that was recommended to me was a chap called David Downing, who wrote a series of books called The Something Station. They're called the Station series, mm-hmm. Zoo Station, Silesian Station, and so on, all about a British journalist called John Russell, who is based in Berlin, again, before the war, in the 30s. And he manages to get himself a US citizenship somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the war breaks out, he's able to stay initially in Germany and carry on writing. Interestingly, he has a girlfriend who has a son called Effie, who is quite a famous actress, but she is Jewish. And these various books map the different stages of the war. He flees off to Russia at one stage and then comes back again. Excellent. Mm. They're all very, very good. Well written.
And you've been to Berlin for a weekend, these things.
Oh, yes.
You kind of have to...
You do.
You understand and you have to...
When I was in the hotel business, I was when I was doing marketing for big hotel groups, I've been to Berlin, I think, about 50 times.
Okay.
Before, during and after the war. Mm. I've been through Checkpoint Charlie into the East and everything else. So I've always been fascinated by the city anyway. Anyway, so yes. So,
hang on, you can't have gone before the war.
No, the war.
The war, okay.
I was born after the war.
I can say, my maths is bad, but really.
just after the war,
yes, well, there we go. But no, it is a special place, for want of a better word, but it's very moving when you're there.
It's a wonderful city now. I think what's particularly interesting is that, I mean, the first time I went to East Berlin, you know, you had to go through this horrible Checkpoint Charlie and, you know, have rifles pointed at you by Russian soldiers and East German soldiers. And I went with a colleague, this was back in 1986, I think it was, and we were driven around the Unter den Linden, which is the main sort of drag there, and you could see all the wonderful buildings that were left. And then we went slightly off the beaten track, and there were still rows of streets shot up from the Second World War.
Yeah.
Bullet damage and, you know, unbelievable. But the great thing about not having knocked all that down was they managed, once they did knock the wall down in 89, they've restored that part of the city. So East Berlin actually looks very much like the Berlin of,
yes,
as must have looked, you know, and it's been restored beautifully and contrasts very much with modern West Berlin, which is I love too, but in a different way.
Yeah, they are different feelings.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely different feelings. And, you know, with or without the wall, it's still there.
Yes.
You still feel the presence. You know, you don't have to go on the cheesy tour to feel the history.
Yes.
Sort of.
Well, I was glad I did that because it was a little bit of history and a day I'll always remember.
Have you ever read any books about Jersey and Guernsey, Seth? Because that's something I don't know why.
No, I haven't actually. My family and other animals.
Mm.
Gerald Darrell. Yes. Again, I believe they've made a television series of.
I think so as well. Yeah, that's ringing.
No, I think they're all set there. No, I never have actually. Funny enough, that didn't.
There's just something, you know,
because it was when I was young.
English and occupied.
Oh, but, yeah, you know, I see what you mean. Oh,
there's something there.
I think I have read a book about the German occupation. I can't remember of Jersey. I can't remember what it was now. It was a while ago. Yes.
I remember seeing something on the TV once, and sort of got the spot my imagination.
Yes.
Do you watch the TV series or the films of books that you've seen? Or
I have done. It depends what they are. I'm going back again, an author I liked a long time ago, and I don't often reread books, as I said earlier, mm-hmm. but I did actually reread these with Nancy Mitford.
Ah, of course, the Mitford girls.
Yes. Yay. Well, the Love in a Cold Climate and the Pursuit of Love.
I'm looking around my little library. I've got them here somewhere.
Well, they're marvellous books because it's of an era, this marvellous, extraordinary, eccentric family. And they actually did make a very good series on the television with Judi Dench many years ago. But also more recently, there was a film made of Love in a Cold Climate and the Pursuit of Love, just called Love in a Cold Climate, mm-hmm. which was very good. I did enjoy that. Yes, yes, indeed.
Any other books that you've had recommended or that you would recommend to people?
There's a couple, actually. I mean, I like Robert Harris. Robert Harris has written a number of books. Again, funnily enough, they tend to be about the war. There was Enigma, which is all about Bletchley Park.
Yes, Bletchley Park, uh-huh.
Which they made into a film, actually. Mm-hmm. Fatherland, which was about the invasion of England, as it were. I just recently read Munich, which was about the Chamberlain and the Munich talks, which is a very good read. And before that, I'd read An Officer and a Spy, which was actually about the Dreyfus Affair in the First World War. Dreyfus was a Jewish officer in the French army who was wrongly accused of spying for the Germans. And it became a huge scandal in France. And he's written this very, very good book about it, which is interesting and obviously historically very interesting. But he writes very well. I like his writing enormously. Yes, who else? Well, not recommended to me, but again, years ago, Armistead Maupin wrote a series of books called The Tales of the City.
Yes.
Which are a magnificent snapshot of San Francisco in the 70s and the 80s. And more recently, he wrote two other ones about the same people, but set in the 21st century.
Okay, Mrs. Madrigal, I remember her.
Yes, that's right, Mrs. Madrigal, yes.
And I want to be like my sort of, you know.
Sort of, yes.
The eccentricity side.
Yes. No, but they're super reading. I mean, they're lovely. I've read all of those again. Yes,
they've actually got the audio series out as well. Yes.
Well, they did really make a television series of them a long time ago.
But I can't imagine seeing it. That would be...
Well, I didn't really like it. I preferred to imagine everything. It was sort of more fun that way. Yes. I don't know if you like Downton Abbey.
I loved Downton Abbey.
But Julian Fellowes has also written a number of books, two of which I've read were Snobs and Past Imperfect.
Okay.
And they are great fun.
Okay,
actually.
That's Snobs I have to look
at. Snobs is great fun, it really is great fun, yes.
And what's that about? Is that similar sort of Downton Abbey type?
Yes, but it's more about, it's awful to say, isn't it, now, because I think I'm going a bit senile, but I read this about 2 or 3 years ago, and I can't actually remember,
but it still makes you smile.
Yes, it is, and I know it was a good read.
Mm-hmm. I think if you read so much, though, things either blur or, you know, somebody, a character comes back into mind, you meet someone, you think, my goodness, they're straight out of... Well, that's what I do, but maybe I should, you know, get a life, I don't know.
Well, another person I've read over the years, and everybody go, boo, is Geoffrey Archer.
I love Geoffrey Archer.
Well, I think whether you like him or not, I think he writes a good book.
He writes a nice letter as well. He's written to me.
Oh, really? All right.
Only because I wrote to him, but he's written to me.
I've just finished reading his Clifton Chronicles, which I think there are 6 or 7 of them, mm-hmm. which are, again, a super read about this family going back to when the boys were young.
I think I've got the last one on my bedside table, actually.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And again, they're all individual books, but mm-hmm. they go from one to the other. And they're just a good read.
Yeah, his saga is very, very good.
Yes.
I like his saga as well.
Yes.
I'd actually written to him while he was in prison, because I thought he didn't have much to do, to come to Malta, because I had an idea for a story that I couldn't write.
Right.
And it was about a house I'd lived in Birgu, which was built in three layers. So there was the sort of the 1500s layer,
right.
And then there was the 1950s layer, or before that, because the front of the house was then bombed in the war.
Okay.
Then it was rebuilt, and then I bought the house in the 2000s. And I just thought, there's this house with these layers. Oh. And if you can imagine one family having had that house and talking, yes. And it's not a rich family or anything, it's a tiny little house in Burugu.
Right.
But I just thought it would have been something perfect for him. But
Oh, yes.
And he wasn't able to travel for a while.
Oh, no. I think it's called Bing de Tay, yes. Her Majesty's Pleasure. Yes.
But yeah, he wrote me a really lovely letter. I've got it in his... He actually sent me his prison diary with a letter.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, that's nice.
So yeah, no, I like Geoffrey yes. Archer. Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel, wonderful. Oh, yeah, Prodigal
Shall
Son.
We Tell the President? All
Shall We Tell the President?
Yeah.
Yes, all good reads. Yeah. All good reads.
No, I like him. I like him. Yes. I will defend him till the end.
Oh, yes. So. Oh, no, yes, absolutely.
As an author.
Well, he's a good talker, actually. He should come out here and, you know, do some...
And then he can write my book as well.
There you are.
We'll organise it.
Yes. Fun enough, he lives in Grantchester, which is in Cambridge.
Okay.
Where I grew up. I know where he lives very well, because it was my stamping ground for many years.
So are there other sort of books set in other times that you...
Yes. I was introduced again by the same friend of mine in London to a lady called Donna Leone. Donna Leone writes these books set in Venice about Inspector Brunetti. So they're police stories. She's lived in Venice for many, many years, and she knows it backwards. And what's nice is the way she describes everything, and you really feel, if you've been to Venice, you really feel like you're there. And they're good stories as well.
So does she? She has a series of them, the same.
Yes,
all the time.
So they're about. I think they're about 15 or 20.
Oh, wow! Okay.
The Brunetti series. Ah. Again, they're a nice, easy read, but they're well written. They're well constructed. They're good stories. Nice characters. You get to know his family, his children, his wife.
And it's set in Venice. It can't be bad.
No, absolutely, absolutely. No, it's lovely. Because you can imagine. You're there.
What sort of time frame is that?
These are contemporary.
Okay, so...
They're contemporary, yes.
So there's not too much...
So I do actually sometimes read something contemporary. Yeah. No, not all masks. Well, there are when it's carnival and things like that, obviously, yes. But yes, they're good.
And she wrote them she's written them in English for... They weren't written in Italian.
No. Well, as far as I'm aware, because she's an American, she's written them in English. Uh-huh. But they may be translated into Italian, I don't know. But
Brunetti, you said?
Brunetti. Yeah. Donna Leone. Uh-huh. And she's quite an interesting woman, yes. So that's another one. So you can see, I tend to sort of latch on to an author I like and try and read.
But it's such a safe bet. There are, you know, although people say the book industry is in decline, mm-hmm. there are so many books to choose from. And like I said, getting a book that you don't enjoy is like being cheated on. You know, for me, it's...
Yes, it is. It's very upsetting, I think.
It's really disappointing. And it's not about the, you know, buying the book. It's, you just feel like you've really been let down by somebody.
Yes. Actually, it's funny, you know, I thought... As I said, I hardly ever, if ever, reread books. We went on a cruise recently, and I thought I must take lots of reading with me. And I thought, because I'm always recommending Nicholas Montserrat's Capellan of Malta to anybody who's coming to Malta or been to Malta, because I really think it's a wonderful, wonderful book. So I downloaded it onto my Kindle and started to read it. And I read the first two chapters, and it's beautifully written. Lovely descriptions at the beginning of you know, because it's the priest's funeral and he gets wrapped up, goes on the old Gilland, I think it was, which I've been on. I remember going on the Gilland when I first came to Malta. But somehow, because I knew what was coming, I thought, I'm not going to enjoy this. And I don't want to spoil my memory of this book by forcing myself to reread it again. Because once you know what's happened, it's...
There were some books that I reread that I don't remember the ending, or I don't remember a particular character pops in. And I'm like, you know, and they're a real faint memory. And so when I've reread the book, they sort of come back to me. But that is only like a couple of books you can do that with. I don't think you can do it with many, for sure. So, and it's, you know, there are so many books to read.
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, another book I would recommend if you've never read it is Earthly Powers, which was written by, the Clockwork Orange Man, Anthony Burgess.
I see books in covers. Yes, I'm not very good at remembering names, but I can see a cover.
It's a great thick book like that. And it takes a lot of reading, but it's very good. And it's partly set in Malta. And, you know, talking of opening lines that you never forget, the opening line of this book is, it was the morning of my 85th birthday, and as I was in bed with my catamite Ali, when the Archbishop called, which was the Archbishop of Malta. It's a marvellous opening line. Yeah. You have to go on after that, don't you?
Exactly.
And that's, again, that is set, that's set between the wars, actually, as far as I remember. Yes, yes. And he goes to Germany. No, it's a good read. Burgess, not an easy man to read, actually, but that was... That
is
was
that another one. Hunk of a book? Is
it's
that
a
another
huge
big,
book,
thick
yes, it really is, yes.
I wonder if there's a... I know in the Library of Malta, the National Library, they have books about Malta, but I wonder if there's a list somewhere of books that mention are set in Malta, because, you know, you sort of see these holiday reads sometimes at the airport.
Yes, yes.
So I wonder if there's like a list where you've mentioned a couple of authors now with settings here.
I don't know is the answer. I mean, they do tend to have Malta sections in some of the bookshops here, which there's a book called, for example, The Scimitar and the something like
that. Oh, The Sword and the
Sword and the Scimitar, which I must get that book. Cause
it's very good.
Yes.
Very good. The thick version, the novel, not the historic version.
Yes.
Although it's, you know, it's a novel based on historic fact, but the novel is actually very good.
Yes. There's another good one called Fortress Malta by Geoffrey Holland,
yes.
I think it is.
Yeah.
I've got a
brown cover.
I've got that in hardback. I've got an autograph signed copy by him, actually, funny enough. I don't know why it's the way I bought it, actually, but yes.
Yeah, no, those sorts of things I like, because you get to see the reference. You're living in the reference, essentially.
Yes, so. Yes. I have to say, that's the only thing about the Kindle, is you don't get... Well, you do get the cover, but it's not quite the same, because it's in black and white,
but
anything else.
But what about also the sort of turning the page and the...
Yes, well, now the trouble is, I find, now I've got so used to the Kindle, the idea of having to hold on to a book and, you know, if you happen to nod off, as one does sometimes, and drop it, lose your place, you can't do that with the Kindle.
Okay.
And I've got the first one I had lots of buttons, now I've got a paper white, so it's a touch, it's all very, you know, so it's very easy, just at the tip of your fingers.
And you can carry hundreds of books every time you travel, so you could go on around the world cruise now.
Well, what is fun about it, actually, is that you can bookmark, obviously, pages and things like that, but you can also, you can underline, you know, lines that you like, and it keeps that memory there, so if you want to go back to pick the book and say, I've got it, that was, I remember this marvellous line from that book, whatever it was, boom, you can find it straight away, whereas if you have to go leaping through your pages in your book, you know. And sadly, unfortunately, some of my books that I've had for 50-odd years are beginning to slightly deteriorate over the years.
Mm.
I know I've got all these wonderful, what used to be half-crown Penguin paperbacks, and they're marvellous covers and everything else, but with all the various moves I've made over the years, and, you know, the humidity of an old house in Gargoura, as was, they've started to fall to bits a little bit, so I'm constantly trying to stick them back together again.
There's got to be a way, actually.
Yes.
There's got to be a way. We'll try and find out for you.
Thank you.
Well, it's been absolutely fun speaking to you. That's Simon Walker on this week's edition of Beach, Books and Beyond with me, Monique Chambers. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me, Monique Chambers, on this week's Beach, Books and Beyond. I'd also like to thank Samuel Attard and Carmelo Breck for helping me to produce this programme. Join us again next week for Beach, Books and Beyond, here on Campus FM.